Hey, if you enjoyed my episode on IEPs and you want to listen to more podcast episodes about IEPs, I want to tell you about another podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. You might have heard me talk about IEPs on my episode, and this latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I checked out these episodes, and I think that they are a great place for you to go after listening to mine. They go into a little more detail and answer a little more in depth about what an IEP is and whether your child needs one. So listen to Understood Explains by searching for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Hello, you sentient balls of stardust. This is Struggle Care. I'm your host, Casey Davis, and there is no bigger struggle than the struggle we experience post-disaster, and perhaps the struggle that we experience before an impending disaster when we feel anxious. And so today I want to talk to Zoe Higgins, who is the person behind the TikTok, The Leftist Prepper. And I want to talk about emergency preparedness. I want to talk about what it means to be a leftist prepper. Zoe, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I love your podcast so much.
So let's start with this. What is prepping? Because it occurs to me that somebody might go, well, what does that mean to be a prepper?
Right. So prepping, when I talk about prepping and I just use the term prepping, and I'm referring to emergency preparedness. So preparing for power outages, job loss. For me, I live in New Orleans, so I prepare for hurricanes, extreme weather events, that sort of thing. So prepping is talking about the act of being prepared for such events.
And what got you into prepping?
I moved to New Orleans in 2017, and prepping is essentially part of your welcome gift when you move to New Orleans. They say, welcome to the city, get a 72-hour kit because hurricanes happen. And so I started off very small. I had a tiny little Tupperware box with some candles and some Chef Boyardee, and that is where I started.
So I want to sort of start by, you know, I've been following you for a while. I myself am a bit of a prepper, and I came to it the same way that you did. I moved to Houston, Texas the year after Hurricane Harvey, and I had a baby, a 5-month-old baby that was on formula. And my greatest fear was, what if we are in a hurricane and we don't have access to clean water and my baby can't eat? And so I asked some people online, you know, okay, how do I prepare for a hurricane? How do I make sure? And I started looking online for like resources and other people that were talking about prepping. And people ask you all the time, you know, why do you have to say leftist prepper? Why do you make it political? And I can say that when I first started to look into prepping and like Googling the word prepping, I understand completely why you had to specify leftist.
Yes. The online community up until recently was, the online community of preppers was mostly 99% alt-right people. And their politics were step in step with prepping. And I quickly realized, because I did the same thing when I moved to New Orleans and got into prepping. I'm online, I'm finding communities, and I immediately felt left out and like I didn't belong there because we were also prepping for very different things. A lot of alt-right preppers are also doomsday preppers, and they are prepping for apocalyptic scenarios that I am not. I am a realistic prepper. And I stay grounded in reality as much as I can. And yeah, I felt very distanced from those communities. And so I just made a TikTok one day showing like my little prep gear, my fun stuff. And I was shocked. I got tons of views and people being like, I'm not a doomsday prepper. Like, why is this on my For You page? And I'm like, well, I'm not either. And within that, I found this like awesome community of other leftists who are preppers.
Yeah, when I occasionally do videos and long form and short form about prepping for disaster. And a comment that I get a lot is, that's not going to help you if, you know, we get attacked or, you know, like apocalypse happens. And I always respond with like, hey, hot take, I'm not trying to survive the apocalypse. I don't know that I want to survive nuclear fallout.
No, like I'm just trying to survive like a 3-day power outage, you know, basic stuff. And it's one of those things where prepping is also about staying comfortable during those experiences. You know, like you're unlikely, the average person is unlikely to totally die during a 3-day power outage. But what can we do to be comfortable during that time?
Yeah. And for me, I know coming in after Harvey, I kind of got like an extreme start. So I asked people online, like, hey, like, what should I do to prepare? And I think had I asked any other year, I would have gotten a very different response.
Absolutely.
The whole of Houston was very much traumatized by Harvey. If you don't know the story of Hurricane Harvey, part of the reason it was so much more of a disaster than expected, like we expected a hurricane, we expected, you know, this hurricane, but there were some last minute weather shifts that made the hurricane stall over Houston.
I remember that. I was watching the news very carefully, and I remember that it just stopped.
And that was what we weren't prepared for. And so everybody that was prepared for these 3-day power outage all of a sudden was going 3 weeks. And the Daily had a great episode about a couple whose, you know, his wife had just had surgery and the water is rising in their home. And he continues to call and say, I need rescue. But they were just overwhelmed. Like the city services were overwhelmed. And so when people gave me their list, it didn't stop at like, oh, you just need a 72-hour kit. Just be reasonable. It was like,
right,
you're going
right.
to need a boat. Like literally everyone was like, if I had to do it again, I would have a boat. Like I would have a blow up raft. At the minimum, I would have an air mattress because if I have to walk through floodwaters and I have children or I have pets or I want to keep something dry, I want to be able to pull something behind me.
Yes.
And so I was like, whoa. Okay. So another one was someone saying, get glow sticks. Because in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, people started going door to door to get supplies. And I'm not talking about like marauders, right? Not like I'm coming in, you know, Walking Dead style with bad intentions to like start my own government and rob you. This was simply people going to empty homes because, okay, I don't have any more batteries. I don't have any more food. There's nobody in this home. I'm going to go in and get some canned goods. And she said, we would hang the glow sticks in our windows to tell people someone is living here. Because without lights, you can't tell who's living there, who's not. And so it was just an interesting thing. You've talked before about part of the reason why you specify leftist is this idea that it's like an individual preparedness versus a community preparedness. So talk to me about how you got into prepping, like your personal story about like, you know, starting with this little kit and then kind of looking around at your community.
So I started with my little kit and I quickly was looking at my friends and realizing very few of them were prepared. And to this day, none of them are as prepared as I am, but it is my special interest. It is my hobby at this point. And for me, I've evolved to the point where I believe leftist prepping is about centering community building efforts at the core of all disaster preparedness efforts. And we can look at studies that show how communities weather after storms and how they measure the resilience of the community. And part of that is how engaged the community is with one another. So I started being on like my local groups, talking about prepping, seeing if people are interested. And everybody's like, well, yeah, we prep light because it's New Orleans. But I now center my efforts on being community minded. And one reason is because we got Hurricane Ida in 2021. And Hurricane Ida, it hit us, but it took a last minute turn. So we were going to get more than expected. And it intensified, as hurricanes often do, at like the last few hours. And we were going to stay. We kept planning on staying, but we had a really elderly dog at the time who could not deal with, you know, the temperatures after a hurricane. That's your real danger, along with floodwaters, is that intense heat. So we decided noon to evacuate. We left at 1 a.m. And in that time, I got my family together. I secured our storm shutters, all of that. And we evacuated to my family in Tennessee. And I have never felt more anxiety, Casey, then when I was watching the Weather Channel as they're showing Ida descending on the city. And I had friends who stayed and they said it was the most terrifying experience of their life. Just hours of hearing everything knocking against your walls and windows and wondering if it's going to sustain. So the day after the hurricane, I'm on Facebook and I'm in a mutual aid group for New Orleans. And I see so many people posting that they're out of batteries already. They're out of diapers. They're almost out of formula. And all of the Walmarts, all the stores in New Orleans are either closed or completely sold out of everything. There is nothing in South Louisiana as far as resources. And the National Guard was coming in, but people had other needs than what the National Guard was providing. So I realized the Walmarts near me in Tennessee are fully stocked. So I post in the mutual aid and I said, I'm coming down tomorrow. Let me know what people need. The amount of comments I was not prepared for. I got about like 50 comments, probably more, of people being like, we urgently need batteries. We have no way to stay cool. I'm staying with my elderly mother. People reaching out for disabled family who were stuck. And so I posted on my little Instagram at the time, and I was not making content really at the time. So this was, I didn't really have a platform yet. And I said, my husband and I are going to be able to give, you know, a few $100 to these efforts. But if you feel led to donate, we're going to Walmart tonight. Within a few hours, people had sent me over $1,000. And so I was able to get so many supplies to really meet the needs of 15 different families. We were able to fully stock with non-perishable food, batteries, cooling fans, and then countless other families that just needed like rabbit food, right? Things like that. And that experience changed forever how I looked at prepping, that it was about the community coming together and surviving together.
You know, what's interesting about that is that, so I live in a neighborhood, we just moved last year, and this last Halloween, we lost power. Just a, like a weird freak thing with the power grid. One of the transformers blew. And so we're like, everyone's kind of like, okay, are we going to trick or treat? Are we going to not trick or treat? Well, a lot of people in my neighborhood have online generators. So like generators that they have on their house to power. And not all of them, but like a good, I mean, between a third and a half probably. So we're going around, we're trick-or-treating, and we kind of roll up to the house. Basically, the houses that have generators are still trick-or-treating, right? Handing out candy. And so I struck up a conversation with someone about like, gosh, I've really got to get a generator in our... And for anyone who doesn't know, like I hear this a lot online, like why don't everyone just get a generator? Generators are so expensive. They're like $16,000, right? Or I mean, it's bizarre how expensive they are. So I'm striking up this conversation and she brings up that the last time there was a freeze, we had a really, really bad freeze in, I think, 2021 in Texas. And she tells me about, it's so wonderful to have a generator because they became this hub of the community. They said, you know, they set up a, like, for lack of a better term, like a soup kitchen, a food place at the elementary school, but they quickly ran out of room. She's like, so we became the second place. My neighbors came over. We cooked from sunup to sundown and handed out food to our neighbors. We had people in our beds, on our couches, laying on our floors. I mean, we maxed it out. We took care of this neighborhood.
I love that so much.
I'm kind of getting emotional because, you know, she was like, I mean, that's what it's about. And that's what happened. And I think what's so interesting is the amount of people who talk about like what happens after a disaster. You know, some people will get onto you and they even get onto me. Like, why would you make videos about prepping? Now everybody knows what you have. And they'll say the first thing that's going to happen in a disaster, especially because we're women, is that somebody's going to come and take all of your stuff. And people, especially as we move farther right, have this idea, this narrative that after a disaster, it's going to dissolve into Lord of the Flies and we'll all be on our own and you have to self-sustain. And I'm curious, like, how you handled those types of comments.
I went down a deep rabbit hole when I started getting a lot of those comments last year. And I did a lot of reading and a lot of research. And I actually just made a video about this other day, but that is feeding into what is known by scholars as the disaster myth. The disaster myth being there's this idea that communities dissolve into crime, chaos, there's no humanity, there is just survival and they'll stab you if you get in the way. That kind of idea. It's a disaster myth. It's not true. There's all these studies that show what actually happens in communities, in rural communities, cities, doesn't matter. And it also extends the bounds of the US. This happens around the world, that communities come together and act extremely pro-socially after a disaster. Very few people are acting selfishly. You will always find people, even when the world is normal, being selfish. But that is by far not the majority of people after disaster. And also, I love to debunk about the disaster myth because the disaster myth feeds into narratives that counteract the needs of survivors. And like that's, we witnessed that with Hurricane Katrina, with false media speculation about this rampant crime in the city. Like, do these people deserve rescue? Because look what they're doing. They're ravaging themselves. And that ultimately hurts survivors. And it counteracts efforts to intervene and provide humanitarian aid.
It also seems, I mean, not to mention the racial component there, certainly with Katrina and somewhat with Harvey as well, but not to mention that there's also this like backwards, like self-fulfilling prophecy, which is like, yes, decent people can become desperate enough to be driven to kind of desperate measures, whether that be violence or manipulative or whatever. But again, that's driven by a life or death desperation. And if a community was preparing in such a way that they were coming together and trying to take care of each other, even if not everybody had exactly what they needed, but there was this sense that we're trying as hard as we can to take care of each other, that seems like that would counteract any kind of like human temptation towards desperation, because I'm only going to resort to that kind of last ditch effort if I feel like this is the only way to keep my family alive. But if families are coming together and demonstrating this idea that, hey, we're going to get through this, for most people, that's going to soothe that sort of last ditch fight or flight temptation.
100%. I couldn't agree more. And another reason why I distinguish myself as a leftist prepper, because it is about that community and about supporting one another. Whereas like there's an alt-right prepper in his basement with tons of food and zero company and no interest in supporting their communities. And that just isn't what it's about. And the study is, and the data shows that it is about community and supporting that as much as possible.
When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is the exquisitely observed memoir of an idealistic young neurosurgeon attempting to answer the question, what makes a life worth living, as he deals with his own terminal cancer diagnosis. It's a stunning reminder to live while we're alive, a must-read for anyone in medicine, from a doctor turned patient. For healthcare workers, expand your view on patient care and the fragile beauty of our mortal lives through Kalanithi's unforgettable words. Some of the questions Kalanithi wrestles with in this book include, what makes a life worth living in the face of death? What do you do when the future flattens out into a perpetual present? When the future no longer is a ladder towards your goals in life? What does it mean when you have a child to nurture a new life as another fades away? When Breath Becomes Air is a number one New York Times bestseller, Pulitzer Prize finalist, and was named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times Book Review, People, NPR, The Washington Post, Slate, and more. When Breath Becomes Air is available wherever books are sold. Learn more at prh.com/breath. Shout out to Claritin for giving me some free samples and for sponsoring this podcast. I am a seasonal allergy sufferer, which means that sometimes I'm lying in bed reading a book that is super happy and my husband says, what's wrong? Why are you crying? Because I am sniffling and he thinks I'm crying. But no, it's just seasonal allergies. Luckily, that does not happen anymore because I use Claritin D. We can live Claritin clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sniffing, sneezing, watery eyes, itchy nose and throat. It's great. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. As for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter, you don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed.
I still remember where I was the first time it hit me. I maybe do have ADHD. And it's funny, I posted a TikTok the other day about having ADHD, and a good friend of mine texted me and said, remember when you swore to me you didn't have ADHD? Oh, goodness. Well, listen, if you relate to that at any point in your life, I want to share a podcast that you should tune into. It's called ADHD Aha, hosted by Laura Key. It's candid stories from people who share the moment it clicked that they or someone they know has ADHD. In each episode, you'll hear heartfelt interviews about the unexpected, emotional, and even funny ways that ADHD symptoms can surface for adults. And it doesn't always look the way we thought it would. So check it out. To listen to ADHD Aha, search for ADHD Aha in your podcast app. That's ADHD Aha, with Aha spelled A-H-A.
One of the things that I find interesting when I look at the alt-right movement with preppers, kind of those doomsday preppers, those, you know, I have this and my cache of guns so I can shoot anybody that tries to get my stuff. It's almost like there's this ideological fantasy that they're like hoping they get to live out. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like there's this weird, like, are you hoping for a Mad Max situation? Like, there's this, I don't know what it is or where it comes from, but it's bizarre.
It's this rugged individualism that I think combined with gun love because they're in my comments every single day, Casey, telling me like, oh, I'm going to come to the blue state when the apocalypse hits.
And just take all your stuff.
Yes. And like vague threats that like don't really mean anything. Like they aren't personally going to come after me, but like threats nonetheless. And it baffles me. I'm like, even if you don't like me because I'm a leftist and that's the only reason for not liking me, fine. But like, don't you want to listen to like the data? Like, don't you like care about the old granny next door who like may need help opening her cans? I don't get it. And it's really far from how I prepare for things.
I would be so curious to deep dive into how like fundamentalist Christian revelation narratives play into alt-right preppers. This idea that like they're going to get vindicated as like the important ones and the right ones. And like, and I'll tell you, as somebody who went to seminary, someone who studied under frankly, conservative biblical scholars, even conservative biblical scholars, none of them interpret Revelation as like a rapture. Like none of them think the rapture is real. None of them think that people who really know what they're talking about, even in like very conservative places.
That's true, actually. I would think so.
Like they tell you Revelation was not, yes, it's a prophecy, but also it's highly symbolic. And most of them will tell you it probably has already happened. Like not the Jesus coming back part, and they do think that will happen, but they think that most of what's written there was describing the things that the person who wrote it was seeing around them. And this idea that you're going to see the signs and it's all going to come crumbling and there's going to be this bit, like most of them do not think that. Most of them do not believe in the rapture. And so it's interesting to me because it truly is this like little branch of like misinterpreted biblical stuff meets like, it's like the worst of that religion meets like the worst of USA individualism culture meets like the worst of misogyny and like toxic masculinity of like, I've been daydreaming all my years that I'm going to have like a weird, like John Wayne moment or something.
Literally. That's like how they talk, the way they get so hype in my comments, or if somebody stitches me who has a conservative take on prepping, the way they are in my comments, essentially just saying it's going to be a free for all. I'm like, you want that to happen, don't you? You look forward to that, which is wild.
Well, and I wonder how much of that is also powered by the racism that they experience when they watch Fox News say, oh, after Katrina, everybody was looting, right? That kind of feeds that. So, you know, we talked about like, I don't want to survive the apocalypse. You don't want to survive the apocalypse. Like, I want to survive a 3-week, you know, disaster, basically. And, you know, there's a lot of issues in prepping. I think we've touched on some of the individualism, some of the racism, a lot of ableism as well. I mean, people love to kind of laugh at the South when we talk about disasters, particularly anyone in like Texas when we talk about the freeze. So we just had a freeze. So we're talking on Monday, January 22nd right now, and Texas just got done with their like 3-day freeze. And it was fine. There was literally but what people don't appreciate is that we get kind of shit on for preparing a lot, like, oh, you can't handle cold. But we also get shit on the back end of a disaster if we didn't prepare.
Absolutely.
And people don't appreciate that, like, we go through a hurricane a year, a tornado watch a year, a freeze a year, and 90% of the time we're all fine, which is why when that one sneaks up on you, that maybe it seems like it's going to be fine. We also have a lot of problems with like local weather, people overhyping things for ratings. And so, you know, you do this sort of like prepare, prepare, oh, nothing, prepare, prepare, oh, nothing, that you kind of get lax. And then the big one hits, right? Your 500 year flood or whatever. And we're all scrambling. And I think that when people laugh at people over preparing, they don't realize that like, it's not about over preparing. It's not about living in fear. It's about the fact that an 8-year-old died in 2021 in his manufactured home. He froze to death.
Right. It's real.
Like, that happened. And I think that every time someone laughs, like it's so real. And there will absolutely, whether it's cold or heat or lack of water or lack of power, like there are people that are on respirators. There are people on oxygen. There are people with mobility issues. Like there's this real sense of Like, if you want to take care of the vulnerable in our community, we can't stop at thinking before we think about disasters.
Oh, absolutely. And that's like another thing I have a big issue with doomsday prepper rhetoric is there's so much racism in there too. And there's so much ableism. And one of the things doomsday preppers are always telling me to do is to make sure I'm in great physical shape. So there's like fat phobia too. They're like, you need to be prepared to run for miles. I'm like, I am not going to do that. And I don't.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Oh, constantly.
That's so weird and random. If anything, you need to be prepared to eat your own fat reserves for 3 weeks. Like, listen, my husband and I are obsessed with this show on Netflix called Alone. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
It's this contest where they take these people who are like outdoorsy survivalists and they give them a camera.
Oh, I have seen this.
It's so it's our comfort show. It's so soothing for some reason. And they send them all out like somewhere in Canada or Alaska or whatever. And they have to survive for 100 days and they can only bring like 10 things with them. So they hunt their own food, find their own water, build their own shelter, and they'll drop out, you know, and whoever's left gets a bunch of money. But one of the things that happens because it's on like the 7th season, right? And they'll tell you how much weight people are losing because they're like finding their own food. Is that now at this point, people will lose 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds. At this point though, when people find out that they're selected for the show, they spend the rest of their time gaining weight. Like they will purposefully put on 35 pounds.
Isn't that interesting?
Because they know the first thing that's going to happen, even if they're hunting every day, even if they're really good survivalists, they're not going to have enough food. So I find that so funny that people love to be like, oh, you're going to need to be fit. You're going to need this. And so you know what else happens? This is so funny to me. The first ones to drop out are the big men who are like Jack. Because they're the ones that need like 5,000 calories to survive a day.
Right. They need that. I have seen that show.
And then this like small woman who needs like a couple thousand calories.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, somebody was in my comments literally last week telling me like, well, the best thing you need to do, is to get in really good shape. And I'm like, what scenario am I going to have to be running for miles again? Because I guarantee it's not during the hurricane. Like, I guarantee you it's not during the power outage. Because, no.
Well, and people love to do the, like, why didn't you just evacuate? Because I was thinking, like, the only time I would need to walk or run for miles is if I get stuck on the highway and I have to get out of my car and start walking. And people don't realize that, like, we have this system here, and I'm sure you guys too, you'll see the signs as you go. There's only, like, a few major interstates out of Houston. When there's a hurricane, they backflow it, meaning they turn the north and south sides both into northbound lanes going out. And still when that happens, it comes to a screeching halt. There was a lot of the mayor of Houston came under fire after Harvey of like, why didn't he evacuate?
Right. I remember that.
And, you know, because it was so bad. And yet there were a lot of experts that came in and said, no, he did the right thing. Had he tried to evacuate, more people would have died because so many people die trying to get out. So many people die being swept away on roads, getting trapped in their cars in extreme weather. And so people don't appreciate that it's not as simple as just evacuate, especially if you have people that are medically complex or vulnerable, or you have your animals. It's crazy. So let's do this.
That's exactly why we evacuated at 1 a.m. for Hurricane Ida, is because we knew everybody was waking up the next day and getting on the road. And it still was filled with traffic. But yeah.
And the classism aspect, like people don't realize that evacuating is a privilege, and they don't realize how many people were still being told they had to come into work.
Oh, 100%. You're at risk for losing income. And evacuating costs hundreds of dollars. Like, we are fortunate that we can drive, it's still 8 hours to Tennessee and have free lodging, but not everybody has that. So some families, they all live here.
That's if you can get the gas too. Like,
if you can get the gas.
There's not enough gas in all the gas stations in Houston to fill every single car if they all decide to go at once. And that's if the guy who operates the gas station didn't evacuate.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So let's shift a little bit and start talking about, you know, if somebody wanted to start preparing.
Yes.
Like, where do we start? Because I know that when people watch my videos, and I'm sure when they watch your videos, the first thing they think is, oh my God, this is thousands of dollars of
oh yeah,
like equipment and supplies. And so where does someone start if they want to start preparing? Do they have to spend tons and tons of money?
I think you spend what you're comfortable with. I think first you start really small. You think about what are things that everybody can prepare for? Power outages, financial hardship, job loss, and severe weather events in your area. What are you most likely? Like, I don't prep for blizzards. I'm in New Orleans. I prep for like a hard freeze that lasts 2 days, but I'm not going to prep for a blizzard. I'm not going to spend money on that. So I say start super small. Start with, it could be as simple as buying just one extra can of beans when you're at the grocery store. And then start doing your research. Start deciding where you want to put your money. So I went from buying extra cans to being like, okay, I need ways to cook this food. So I get my outdoor stove, camping stove, I mean, and fuel for that. And then I'm like, well, these cans of beans are like really gross. So what can I look into? Then I'm into freeze-dried meals, which are actually like much more cost efficient than any food you get at the grocery store, amazingly. And so, looking there, I also tell people to always try the food before you buy a bunch of it. Great, 10 out of 10 recommend, and always have spices in your 72-hour kit. I think starting with the 72-hour kit is the key. Like, that's step one.
So what would I need to live for 72 hours if I ran out of food, water, and power? Is that what it is?
Yes. You need 1 gallon of water per person per day. You need more if you have pets. Food, I prefer freeze-dried food. And you also need, if you go freeze-dried, make sure you have enough water for cooking that food. I've lost count how many gallons I have stored up. I just have a lot.
And water is interesting too, because it's not as simple as throwing a 12-pack of plastic bottled water in your garage and then forgetting about it for 9 years, right? Like, people don't realize that water does expire, not because the water itself expires, but because the plastic begins to break down and leach into your water. So one of the things that we did when we moved to Houston was we bought canned water. Specifically, it's called emergency canned water, that they take all of the minerals out of the water and then can it so that it is shelf stable for up to 5 years. And so we always have a bit of those offhand. The other thing is that we have these water containers called aqua packs, and we have four of them, so one for each person. And they're great because they're these big blue containers. And anytime we know a freezer, a storm or something is coming, like, we just fill them up and stick them to the side. And then, you know, from there, like, that's kind of like your basics. And then you can kind of move into the more niche stuff if you have other things covered. So, like, then I got a life straw. Then I got some iodine tablets. Then I have that, right? Like,
what I call the fun part of prepping is I love when I save up or get like a new little gadget to go with my prep. Also, people need a hand crank emergency radio. They're, you can get them on Amazon. You can get them in a lot of places. Usually you can charge them beforehand, but they also have that hand crank. And make sure it has a channel called WB for weather bug. And that's the furthest right on the dial of any weather bug thing is your local station. And that's how we get weather updates during a power outage. And also what people don't realize is during a lot of these kinds of disasters is cell phone towers aren't super reliable and they do go down. Not every time, but like, they went down during Ida. When we came back to the city, we had very little way to communicate.
One of the other things, when we just going back to the water, is that I like to have the canned water on hand, and I like to have my aqua packs, because if there's a run on the grocery store, I can't rely on being able to go get bottled water from the grocery store. The other thing is, so we talked about water, we talked about food. What about extreme temperature? Like, what would be the basics that you would want in a kit for extreme temperature?
I know how to prepare for extreme heat, New Orleans. After a hurricane, it can feel like 120 degrees outside, and it's going to feel comparable inside because of that. I recommend you always get ahead by staying really hydrated, staying in the shade as much as possible. Battery-powered fans are great. What's even better are those cooling towels. They have, like, the Froggy brand makes some. Lots of brands do. And you don't have to use cold water to make them cool. Just plain water, room temperature water, makes them cool. The National Guard in New Orleans during Hurricane Ida gave out packs of ice, as many as you wanted, if pulled through. And so that was handy. We put a fan on top to suck the cold air into our room. That was helpful. But really not pushing yourself during high heat. Like, there is no reason we need to go out and do a 3-mile walk for funsies. There is none of that. Also, our water was still running. It wasn't safe for drinking, but I was just constantly taking showers. Just constantly. Just staying as cool as you can. Yeah, wet hair.
Totally. Yeah, wet hair, wet shirts. My sister lived in Boston when they had a heat wave, and she would sleep in a wet t-shirt every night, which was helpful. The other thing is, now this is niche, but it's fun to have to know. So I spent a lot of time in Mexico in the Yucatan Peninsula. And one of the things down there is that they are actually a culture that sleeps in hammocks quite a bit. And they have beds, but in the heat, they sleep in a hammock. And it's because it's so much cooler to sleep. And yeah, and not the hot, not like a solid material, but like a netted hammock. If you just look up that type of hammock, is really interesting. Now, I'm in Texas, and so we prepare for the heat, but because of our electric grid not being very reliable and because of our freezes, we also prepare for freezes. And the reason we do is because our infrastructure won't take care of us as well as it would somewhere else. So in our 72-hour kit, we have emergency blankets. And that's that, like, they look like tinfoil that you see kind of on movies and stuff. They're very cheap to buy. And you can throw those in there for very little money. I think that would be like a basics for a 72-hour kit. If you were to build off of that, some other things that we have done, we have a couple of those, like, you know, hot hands?
Yes. I actually just bought a massive pack of them.
And they make blankets too. Like, they're called lap warmers. Mm-hmm. And so I got that because I have little kids and I thought, well, if I have to throw that on them, you know, I'm going to do that. Also, depending on what, if you have backup power sources, one of our sort of splurge buys for like $1,000 was called an EcoFlow battery. So this is kind of that midway between, we don't have a full generator, but we have this huge battery and it has 99 hours of battery depending on what you use for it. And we got that because now we can run a fan. Now we can charge our phones. Now we can even run, like, I bought a cheap DVD player because I was like, I can run a DVD on like a small screen, right? Yeah, I can run that. I can also run a heating pad or an electric blanket. I can run a space heater, although electric blanket's going to, I think, take less. So those are some things we do for heat. The other thing we did, getting beyond the 72 hour, but just for whatever, is that we bought a tent. One, it's a great multi-use because if you go camping, you do whatever. But if you're truly going to go days and days and days in very, very, very cold temperature, getting all of your family and pets inside of a tent, inside of a room, maximizes the body heat that stays inside that.
I've heard that before. I've heard people doing that during that big freeze y'all had a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. And there's some other interesting things, like people talk about, like making little terracotta stoves over a pot or various things, which brings us to a thing that I think a lot of people don't think about, which is information. Like, in your 72-hour kit is information. Because like you said, you may not have access to the internet. So you're going to be sitting there, because I also know, because I went through a training once about that you can use a little bit of bleach to purify water. You can also put water in clear bottles and throw them up on your roof and let the sun do it over a certain amount of time.
Oh, that's interesting.
But here's the thing. Yeah, I'm not going to remember exactly what the time is. I'm not trying to mess up.
Dilution.
Yeah, a dilution.
Poison your family.
And we're so used to, oh, just Google it, that all of a sudden you're sitting there going, right? And so I think printing things off and, you know, sticking them in your little box is a huge part of it. And so, we got food, water. We talked a little bit about power, information, those little solar banks for a phone can be really helpful.
Yes. I have so many of those little portable chargers. Just whenever I have an extra $30, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get another one. I have so many. And then I have a massive big battery, like the EcoFlow. And those are going to be like huge assets. Those like require saving up a little more. They're a few hundred dollars. But if you're able to and be able to save for that, I really recommend doing that. At the very least, those hand crank emergency radios also have an output for charging a device. And all
you can also charge your EcoFlow with your car.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a cord to do that too. And then light, right? Little lanterns and things like that. One thing that I didn't know for a long time is that you should not store your batteries inside of your equipment because...
Yes, I learned that the hard way.
I did too. I opened up a lantern and it was crumbled and eroding inside.
Corroded, yes. Yes. And make sure if you're not using like a battery daddy, I don't have a battery daddy. I know a lot of people do. They're very cool. But I have different like plastic containers to hold batteries. Make sure that the ends of the batteries are never touching because it'll drain batteries if they're touching just right. So don't just throw them in a plastic bag.
The other thing is, so I think that's a pretty good basics kit. Let's talk about some of our like fun things, our niche things. So this isn't, I actually eventually bought I have a gas turn off. I don't know about you guys, but where we are, you can't turn your gas off yourself. Like the gas company has to come out to do it. But I have now the big key so that I can turn my own gas off.
Cool. That's really handy. I like that. I also have multiple manual can openers because I have so much freeze-dried food in number 10 cans, which are the extra large ones. And can openers, I don't know if you have experience, they break like it's their job. So I have multiple manual can openers. I also want to stress for building any kind of prep kit that redundancy is key. Like you're not going to, it's really hard to like overdo it for prepping. And it's one of those things where you may feel like, oh, we don't need more water. But then if you get that extra water, you're going to feel really good that you have it if you need it. So redundancy.
Oh, you know what we forgot? First aid kit.
Yes, a first aid kit.
And you can do a basics one. I eventually upgraded to a field kit, which means that I not only have first aid stuff, but I also have like if I need to build a tourniquet, you know, bleeding stopping, things like that. And they can get expensive. So just starting small is the important part.
A few weeks ago, my husband's beloved grandfather died, and it's been a really sad time for our whole family. But one of the moments of light in this whole process was shortly after he passed away, I got an email from my mother-in-law, and she had sent all of us a link to his Storyworth book. I don't know if you're familiar with Storyworth, but I have a new appreciation for them now that we have a Storyworth book on my husband's grandfather. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story, long or short, it doesn't matter. And then you get emailed a copy of their response as they're submitted in the course of a year. You'll get to enjoy the retelling of their stories that you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before. And after that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. I am so grateful to my mother-in-law for doing this with her dad. We love it. Families love Storyworth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. So Mother's Day is coming up, and I want to give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you will cherish for years. Right now, save 10% on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/struggle. That's storyworth.com/struggle to save $10 on your first purchase. Whether it's Mother's Day, Father's Day, or just because you know that sometimes time is short and you want to capture those memories.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who have still not been reunited. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called El Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, El Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. You can find the link to donate to El Otro Lado in the description of this episode or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, alotrolado.org/volunteer. That's ALOTROLADO.
One of the other things that I have in my kit, which is not only for my family, but also community-oriented building, is that, in my past life as an evangelical, I have since deconstructed, no longer consider myself an evangelical, but I went to work for a church in Guatemala City. They had invited me down to work to help institute like a new ministry that our church had written. But that kind of cross-cultural work is still considered missionary work in the church. And so they sent me to like missionary training, and it was like 5 weeks. And most of it was about like having cultural humility. But there was a part of it that was about like some basic survival, because a lot of people were going to places that weren't as like developed or resourced. And so they taught us how to like build composting toilets and things like that. But one of the things that they gave us while we were there is this book called Where There Is No Doctor. And it's basically a village medical handbook. It's written for the layperson. It has lots of pictures and drawings, but this is everything from how to address a cut to what to do if someone gets infection to literally there's a chapter on how to birth a baby.
Yes.
And it also has some of the things that we may not be as familiar with about like malaria and cholera and things that happen when you don't have as great water treatment. So there's that. The other thing is, and we don't have this, but if you were going to get like really into like splurging, is there is a company that you can actually purchase antibiotics from.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that company. I haven't done it because it's expensive and they have a short shelf life, but it's good to look into.
Yeah. So we don't have any for that reason. Let me ask you this. What's your most, like the one piece of like supplies that you've really geeked out on that you think is so cool?
Probably. Oh, gosh, that's so hard. My portable battery by PowerSmart. I'm obsessed with. I love that I just have like 100 hours of battery when I need it. I did purchase 2 storage cabinets from Home Depot. And now in our back room, I have like a prep area. Like it used to always just be like under the bed or like in closets, shoving it where I could. But now I have like a label maker and I've labeled everything. I really like, I know you asked for one, but I'm giving you multiple. In my first aid, I have everything labeled for like what kind of illness. I have like the tummy troubles bag and colds, respiratory illnesses. So everything is separate. It's the only thing in my house crazy organized. Also, one of my favorite things that people don't think of is to have board games or a deck of cards in your kit.
Yep.
It's easy to get bored.
The coloring stuff for your kids. That reminded me of one other thing. Oh, whistles.
Yes, whistles. FEMA lists that on their website for 72-hour kids that you should have a whistle.
I think even the CDC, they're like, you can go onto some of the USA government, and I'm sure other governments have it too. They have a pretty good list of 72-hour kits. All right, so let's talk about things that people may not think to include, because I have a big one, which is a map of your state.
Yes.
Because if you lose GPS, do you know how to get anywhere?
Do you know how to? No. The answer is absolutely not.
Especially if you know, okay, I have family in the next city, but it's like, I wouldn't know how to get there if I didn't have like a roadmap, a literal roadmap. And most of us don't have those anymore.
And even like practice looking at it, like make it your bathroom reading for a week where you look at it and say, okay, I would take this and this. Because a lot of us, I remember my parents using maps back when we were kids, but I have not picked up a physical map and like mapped a route in ages. So become familiar with your supplies in general, as well as looking at maps. You know if you have a special kind of can opener, the first time you use it should not be when you need it most.
The other thing I think is good to have is, if you don't have access to phones or anything like that, is to have printouts of something that basically is like a note to your neighbors, and a bonus if you can laminate it, that basically says like, hey, we're at this address. I don't know, you know, if you need something, come to us, let's whatever. Because if something happens, you can quickly go and sort of drop that into or under, you know, put that on somebody's as a way of pulling together.
I'm going to steal that. That's a great idea.
And for that reason, we have radios too. Like if you have, we have a friend that lives a mile away and we don't have this yet, but we're like, you know, we should invest in like long radio, like walkie-talkie, so that we could like contact each other.
That's my next investment, actually. That's what I'm researching, which one to get now while I save up. But like a good communication system when cell phones are down.
And speaking of like affording these things, one of the things that my mom and I did for a really long time is like, this was our Christmas gift to each other for years, especially when I got to the point in my adulthood where I was like, okay, I'm going to be okay if I don't use Christmas as a way to get like my basic needs.
Right. Totally.
But it kind of got to the point where I was like, I don't need more stuff, like more like random things. And so my mom and I would give each other emergency supplies stuff. And so it was like a way of using that budget to do that. And that was still fun. What about go bags? What's a go bag? What's a bug out bag? Like, what is that? Well, how should that be different? Where should that be?
Bug out bag is essentially the bag that you have if you're told, okay, we got to evacuate right now, and you have minutes to do it. Your bug out bag has copies, hard copies of all your important documents. It has a lot of what would be in a 72-hour kit, maybe a little smaller. It depends on if you also have a separate, like I have a go bag in my car at all times that has stuff specific to being stuck in my car. Your go bag is when you have to evacuate with not much time at all, and it's what you grab and you know everything's in there. Camping stove, camping meals are a great portable way to transport food instead of having to shove a bunch of cans in your bag, and they're super lightweight.
Yeah, I have a go bag in my car as well. I think my biggest splurge was the boat. I have a 4-person inflatable boat. We have a foot, you know, thing. So, you know, but that would take like hours. But that's one of the things that we would use our emergency battery for, is we have an electric pump. But it is a full-on 4-person raft with oars. And part of the reason we have that is not necessarily like, I can't imagine a scenario where we would need to actually like evacuate via boat, but there absolutely have been scenarios where you need to go get your neighbor.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Or if you can't use your boat, there's somebody doing rescue efforts that can use your boat. And that's another free way to prep. I always tell people, like, if you have no money to put towards your prep, start getting invested in your mutual aid group, your local mutual aid group. Start talking to your neighbors. Make sure you have each other's numbers, that you have a friendly. I have chickens, so I give my neighbors eggs to stay with good rapport, and apologize for the sounds of chickens all the time. And just keeping up that rapport with each other. So like, I know the first thing, if we get a hurricane, I'm texting Judy next door to see if they got everything they need. And I'm also talking to the elderly man next door to make sure he doesn't need me to go to Walmart for him, you know, stuff like that.
Let's round it out with talking about some safety things that people may not know when prepping. The first I want to start off with is that fire should be your last ditch effort, and you should truly be choosing between freezing to death and starting a fire. Because every time there is a severe weather incident around cold, especially in the South, people die from setting their homes on fire because they are so desperate to get warm. It happened in 2021. It happens every single time.
Yes. And in the same vein, be really aware of CO2 poisoning, and specifically having CO2 alarms that are powered by batteries. So they aren't linked to your electrical wiring. If that's down, make sure that those constantly have fresh batteries for like a big freeze or somewhere where you might want to be using a gas stove indoors or something like that. I'm also dealing with high heat, so I always use our camping stove outside. I know that you can technically use them indoors. It freaks me out. If I'm able to cook outside, I'm going to be doing it outside.
Yeah. Well, because we have a gas fireplace and a gas stove, we have CO2 anyways, but my fear would be like, what if there's a rupture, or, you know, especially if you're in a place with earthquakes, you want to be able to be alerted to that. You want to be careful with your space heaters. Space heaters are one of those things that start fires a lot. So you don't want to put them in an enclosed area necessarily. Don't put them inside of a tent. They really need a lot of space around them. And we have space heaters, but we specifically have this type of space heater that has this thing on the bottom that when it's depressed, it turns on. But if it ever becomes undepressed, so like if it gets knocked over.
Oh, mine does the same.
It'll turn itself off.
Yeah. Right.
And then we talked about water having an expiration date. I think that's important. Just so that everybody knows, if you do have a generator, you have to run your generator outside. You cannot run it in your garage. In fact, you're supposed to run it at least 16 feet away from your house.
They emit so many fumes and contribute to deaths every single time there is an extended power outage.
And most of them take gas. And people may not know that gas is not something you can just throw into your garage and forget about.
Oh, yeah. No, it does expire quicker than water even.
And you have to keep it in a special container.
Yes. I also think people should just be aware of the signs of CO2 poisoning. Like if y'all are running something in your house, or maybe you're not, there's a leak and you don't know it. If everybody in your family is having a headache, go outside and assess. It's not the time for everybody to take a nap. It's time to be suspicious. There was a gas leak in one of the college houses when I went to college, and these students were so smart. Literally, one of them got a headache and just decided to tell somebody else in the house. And he was like, I have a headache too. And they all put it together that they had headaches and they went outside. And I was like, I don't know if I would have been that smart. I might have just kept it to myself and gone and taken a nap.
The other thing with extreme heat to be aware of is that some of the homes in Houston and probably other places, even if it's not a huge home, like I was in a 200 square foot home and it was a 3-story home, we have two different thermostats. So one unit, but two thermostats. And then some bigger homes will have two units where like one is powering the upstairs, one is powering the downstairs. And tragically, there have been instances where the upstairs unit shorts out, but the downstairs unit doesn't. And there is a child sleep or a baby sleeping upstairs while the parents are actually sleeping downstairs. And they don't realize that the temperature is skyrocketing upstairs. So in normal day-to-day stuff, you can get like EcoBees and things like that. You can even get these, they look like little pucks that will alert your phone to high heat, like detection.
Oh, I have those in my chicken coop.
But it is just something to be aware of. If you're going into a storm, you know, you might lose power. You know, you don't want something weird to happen where the top shorts out, but the bottom doesn't, or the top shorts out first or it heats up first. That's certainly important. Along the lines of water, one of the big things that you hear, especially for just sort of like the lay person who maybe isn't like over prepped when it comes to water, is people will say, fill your tubs, fill your bathtubs. This is a great way to stock up on water for bathing, for flushing toilets. That's a big one. But one of the things to be aware of is that having a tub full of water can be very dangerous if you have small children that might walk in and go, oh, bath time, and get into the bath. You know, you want to be very careful. And so some things that people have done to get around that, one is that sometimes people will just put, probably the cheapest thing is just put a latch lock at the top of a bathroom door so they can lock a bathroom door up high so that their children can't get into it. And then some people will go and actually splurge for, there's a thing called a water blob. And it's like a big, huge bladder that you can put in the bathtub and then use the bathtub to fill it out. But it's like a bladder, like you can't,
right?
You know what I mean? You can't get into it. It's closed. And we don't have one of those, but I am aware, like one of the reasons why we don't fill bathtubs in my home is because I have small kids, one of whom is autistic and loves water. And it totally, totally does. So anyways, in conclusion, Zoe, the leftist prepper, do you have any like lasting thoughts, especially I wonder around like anxiety, because I feel like there's probably people listening who now have so much anxiety off the charts. You know, how do you go about this kind of hobby or this kind of maybe passion project without giving into sort of anxiety, desperation, fear?
I love that you asked that, because when I started, it was out of anxiety. It was my first tropical storm was coming and I never weathered something like that. And I'm frantic, you know, and I think starting really small and reminding yourself the world is not ending. The world isn't ending. We are okay. And unless there's an extenuating circumstance, nothing bad is going to happen tomorrow. Likely, it's just going to be a normal day. I always felt best knowing that even just like an extra 2 cans of food a week, I was still preparing. I still had something. And I also started with my cheapest supplies, as opposed to going right out the door, investing in like a $600 power storage thing. And that was made it doable for me. And that made it accessible for me. Just remind yourself the world isn't ending, that we're just starting small and we're doing what we can.
I also think that if you live in a place where you have close neighbors or you have an apartment complex and you know people in your complex, it's okay to split up some of those things of, hey, like I'll do some extra water. You do some extra food. You pick up some extra flashlights.
I love that. I think that's ideal. Like, I think if you're able to do that and you are able to build those kinds of relationships, that is ideal. Because like my lasting thing I want to leave people with is the reminder that community is at the core of any successful preparation. There is no such thing as surviving a disaster, a lone wolf. And even if you do survive, it might be pretty miserable.
Well, thank you, Zoe. Just because this is actually important, and I forgot to say it in our safety ones, don't ever hide in your attic against floodwaters. You will get stuck there and not be able to get out.
Unless you have a hatchet. Even then, though, people say to keep here, they tell you to keep a hatchet in your attic to hatch through. Have you tried to hatchet something lately?
I promise you, I couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it. No, it's best to get out.
The other thing that's really important, and I always see these on TikTok, do not go into flood water if you can help it. Like, unless it's really, really necessary for your survival, do not go out in flood water. Do not walk in flood water. Flood water is not regular water. Flood water is toxic. It has gotten into your sewer system. like your sewer system and various bodies of water. Like think of all the bodies of water. Like you have your sewer system, you have stagnant lakes with brain-eating amoeba in it. Like it's a lot of people after Harvey got very sick from the flood water. And sometimes you can't help it. You have to go out to survive.
You have to, right.
But every time I see TikToks of people like playing in water after a flood, I'm always like, don't do it.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Zoe. Tell people where they can find you on TikTok.
I am at TikTok at Quarantine Wino, and it's Zoe Leftist Prepper. Thank you so much, Casey.
Thank you.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.